reminded her. His mom was out there somewhere.
Right, she said. Now what?
A bunch of shots sounded at once from outside, from the front of the building. He should move now if he was going to, but he hadn't seen any better spot to go than where he was. Every time he heard gunfire, it made his head hurt a fraction more.
How do we advance? Sierra said.
Truth was, he had no idea if they could. He wished they had found some tear gas in the jail. That would sure make this easier.
If we can just hold them, he said. Eventually, our side will get here. That could be an hour or more, she said. We don't have ammunition enough to last an hour.
We could retreat to the jail. The answering gunfire from inside the building had died down. At least they didn't seem to have another grenade launcher, or a bazooka, or a fully automatic rifle in there. That was lucky, and it was important to know. They were on a level playing field, except the men in the room had a better defensive setup.
Name some guerrilla techniques to assailing a fortress, he said. Leapfrogging, she said. You go first.
No, he said, knowing she was just teasing.
What else? Surprise? Misdirection? Hit and run?
She furrowed her brow.
That'd be good, but I can't hit from here.
What else?
Sabotage their weapons. Traps like punji sticks.
Dev couldn't see how any of those could apply.
I'm going to check something. Fire a shot every minute or so, okay? If it's safe, move a few feet every time so they don't know how many of us there are. Where are you going?
I don't know yet, he said. Then he sprinted across the wide hall and toward the back of the building. He opened the first side door he came to, a supply closet. The next door led to stairs. Maybe? Sierra too? Or just him? He hissed at Sierra. She turned to look at him. He pointed up, and then at himself. She nodded, getting it. The last he saw of her, she stepped out and took an oblique shot at the broken glass doors. Dev took the step slowly, favoring quiet over speed, but he didn't have all the time in the world. The jailed men with only 2 dozen rounds and weeks of frustration were going to run out quickly, and only his mom and Jackson would still be firing. The batons would be of no use against the bullets. It was up to him to change the balance of the standoff. The hallway up here was dark, so he went back to using a scope. Nothing. Nothing. No glow to the left or right. He made his way through one room, out a door opposite. The hallways seemed to be set up differently up here. There was a maze of small offices and narrow hallways. The room he had just left opened to 2 halls. The second one only had 1 exit. He wove through them, making for the front corner of the building. The defensive fire came from the building helped guide him. He finally opened a door that gave him a view of a bank of windows, green rectangles of reflected light seen through a scope, and then a weapon fired from directly under him. Now the question was, could he shoot through the floor? What was an office building like this made of? Were there thin spots? Vents? Though if he could successfully shoot through the floor, they could shoot through the ceiling in response. So maybe not the best idea. Should he get out a light and hunt for a vent or vulnerable spot? No, not yet. He backtracked to the hall and heard a voice. Then another voice shush it. It was coming from the wrong direction. Not the room below where they'd been meeting, but down the hallway, up here. He was glad now he hadn't used a light. More voices. Climbing in the windows, maybe? He found a cross hall that led to the side of the building, and he heard rain pounding. A window at the end of the hall had been left open, probably for ventilation. And there were voices outside. His men from the jail? Or the enemy? The possibility of death by friendly fire came home to him. He realized he was no longer hearing the generator. They must have shut it off. Then he heard a clatter of metal. He approached the window on tiptoe. Once there,
He eased it open another few inches, looking to either side as he did so, not sticking his head out until he knew more about what and who was out there. He couldn't see anything from back here, but he heard the word, climb, and then a metallic sound again. Footsteps. Up a fire escape? The image came to him of a metal set of stairs attached to the outside of the building. He hadn't noticed one on his way around the building, but he wouldn't have necessarily, right? Not looking up, and so used to seeing them in town, they faded into the background for him. "Take out as many as you can," hissed a voice. Another voice said, "He's too high. He can't hear you. Let's circle around. Whoever these bastards are, we'll get him. Go on down." So they weren't just sitting there and taking it, defending their building from the meeting room. They were trying something more daring. Then Dev would have to be daring too. He pushed himself out of the window and turned to the direction of the metallic footsteps. A shape was moving above him on metal stairs, up toward the top of the building. Another 30 seconds, and he'd be out of range, and Dev's mom would be in danger as he fired from a higher position. Dev leaned out farther, twisted, and brought the rifle up to an awkward firing position. But it was the shot he had, and he had to take it fast, before the men below saw him, or the man above disappeared. He made himself take a half second to aim carefully, finding the glow of human warmth through the scope, bisected by dark patches of the metal stairs. And then he pulled the trigger. The shot pinged off metal. The man froze, and Dev moved his aim just a fraction and fired again. Then stone cracked by his elbow and exploded in tiny shards that struck him, even as he registered the shot from below. He held his position and fired a third time, hearing not the sound of his bullet striking metal, but something softer. His rifle jumped in his hands as a round fired from below struck the barrel of it. He wriggled backward until the weight of his body dragged him down from the window. A 3-shot burst was followed by the sound of breaking glass, and a shower of glass rained down on him. He ducked his head and closed his eyes. The last of the glass tumbled onto him. He shook his head without opening his eyes. Glass tinkled as it fell off him and onto the floor. He put his hand down to push himself back from the window and the pile of glass, and a piece of broken glass sliced painfully into the heel of his hand. Stupid. He managed to push himself along with only his feet, skating along on the seat of his pants, and made it another few feet away from the window. Gingerly, he put his uninjured hand down. A few little pieces of glass were on the floor. With the edge of his hand, he brushed them away, and he managed not to drive any glass into that hand when he put it down. He pushed himself up to his knees and stood. More glass fell from his hair. His hand with the glass in it hurt. He really wished for light now. He moved down the hall to the first doorway, leaned his rifle against the door jamb, and tested his hurt hand with his unhurt one. There was a piece of glass still in there, about 3 inches long, thin. His mother would probably yell at him for doing this, but he got a grip on it with his other fingers and yanked it out. Ow! Son of a gun, that hurt! He held the hand up and could feel blood dripping down his wrist. Gotta be something in my pack to deal with that, right? He touched his rifle, reassuring himself it hadn't moved, and then shrugged off his pack and rooted blindly in it. Ha! There. Duct tape. That'd do. Might regret it in a few hours when he ripped it off, but it would stop the bleeding, which he couldn't see, but could feel and smell, a metallic scent that hit him in some nervous animal part of his brain. He started the duct tape with his teeth, held the end between 2 fingers of his uninjured hand, his non-dominant hand unfortunately, and wiped his blood on his jeans. Then quick as he could, working in the dark, he slapped the tape onto his injured hand, but it slipped. Too bloody. Okay, we need a plan B. He wiped his bloody hand again, both sides, took hold of the slippery tape end, and gripped it between 2 of his fingers on the injured hand. Then he was able to unwrap more tape, and he slung it over his hand, and over again, and over a third time. It was something of a snarl at first, but he finally had it sticking in places. Once that was done, he was able to slow down and be more careful with a couple winds of tape. The second wind, it stuck to itself solidly, so he made the next wind tighter, and a final wind tighter still. He checked the bandage to make sure it wasn't going to shift, and then bit the tape at the roll and tore it in two. The roll went back in his pack. He used the bandaged hand to finger comb his hair to get the rest of the glass off him. Pack back on, rifle over his shoulder, and he was ready to move. For the whole time he'd been bandaging himself, he hadn't heard the men outside below him, neither their voices nor their weapons. But that might mean they were still trying to flank his mom's group. So he went to the room with the front windows and tried to open one of them. He couldn't find a lock. Time was of the essence. So he took his rifle, his cut hand hurt badly as he touched it to the hot barrel, and he slammed the butt against the window. Once. Twice. It broke out. Gunfire came from his people. He sat on the floor and yelled, "It's Dev! It's Dev! Don't shoot!" The bullet stopped, but he wasn't taking the chance of sticking his head up there. He yelled from where he was, "Watch it! They're flanking you to your right!" Then he heard bullets firing below him, up into their ceiling. Good time to leave. He ran for the hallway and kept running, not stopping until he hit the interior stairway again. He went slowly down the stairs, feeling a wave of tiredness, normal after a surge of adrenaline. His head was pounding again, not the low-level headache he'd had most of the day since he'd woken, but a rush of sharp pain. He touched his left temple, but he really wanted to sit down and massage his head. No, don't leave Sierra alone for any longer. Right, right. He had to get down the steps. He found an emergency release bar on the door and pushed it, taking a step and only then realizing he should have looked first. But no one shot at him. Sierra turned, brought her rifle around, took one look at him, and screamed his name. "What?" he said. "Oh my God," she said. "Are you hit?" "No," he said, confused. And then he looked down at himself and saw the blood. He was really smeared with it. His bandage was an inept-looking thing, and it had merely slowed the flow of blood, not stopped it. He had a smart thought, a bit of a miracle considering his pounding head, and stuck the injured hand over his head. "I think I need first aid." Sierra looked forward to the office where the men were holed up, then back at Dev. She shook her head, pushed off the wall, and fired one last time into the broken door, and then ran for Dev. Or not, she ran right past him to the back door and pushed the metal handle down. The door slid open. "Can you walk?" Dev nodded, then regretted that he had. It made his head hurt worse. The pain was coming on him like a freight train. "Let's go." When he made it to the door, she plucked at his shirt and dragged him out. The door shut behind them. "They can follow us. We should try and block it," he said. "Don't worry about that. I need to get you safe. Come on." She kept dragging him by his shirt front. "I can walk," he said, reaching up for her wrist and pulling at it. It was still raining hard, and both their hands were already wet. "Can you make it to the truck?" "Yes." He was getting irritated with her. "But whatever you do to fix me, do it quick, so we can get back to fighting." "Dev," she said, "I think you're out of the fight." "I'll be okay," he said, following her to the truck, which he knew was close, but seemed strangely far away. When he got there, he leaned against the truck. Only then did he remember the men at the side of the building. He raised his rifle scope to hunt for them. "No, no," she said, coming over to yank at his shirt again. "Down here, behind it." They made it to the far side of the truck. She reached up and grabbed the door handle. "What are you doing?" "Hoping for an interior light," she said, and she opened the truck door. Her wish was granted. Interior light spilled out. "They'll see us. They aren't back here. I looked." She was examining his duct tape bandage and shaking her head. "Guys came around the driveway, maybe out a window or something, trying to flank my mom and them. Watch out for them coming back this way." "There are?" She looked up. "I'm borrowing your rifle, for the scope."
"It isn't zeroed for you."
"Just to look," she said. "Not to shoot."
While she crawled over to check there, what would that be? 10 or so on the clock for her? He looked at his hand. Yeah, that was a really crummy job of bandaging. It had hurt too much to pull it off, so he'd have to cut it. He had a pocket knife somewhere. And damn, but his head was killing him. It was making it hard to think. Too much noise, that's what it was. But no, it was silent now. So why was his headache getting worse with every moment? Left-handed, he searched through pockets for his knife. There were a lot of pockets. He found a magazine, a box of ammo, and finally the knife, which was impossible to open one-handed. He was working at pulling out a blade with his teeth when Sierra sat back down.
"No sign of them."
"Still a firefight?"
"Pretty sporadic shooting," she said. "I hope they're low on ammo and not saving it all for when we run out."
"Mom will know what to do." He probably did too, but it was hard to think right now. His head hurt so much.
"Dev?"
she said.
"What is it?"
"Head hurts," he admitted.
"Were you shot in the head?"
Her fingers went to his head, and she began patting it.
"Ow, dang. What was that?"
"Glass," he said. "Be careful. I wasn't shot in the head. I was shot in the window."
"You aren't making any sense," she said. "I think you were shot in the head."
"No, it's my headache. Got worse again."
"You should have stayed home."
"I wouldn't have."
"No, I guess you wouldn't."
She finished checking his head.
"I don't feel blood up there. So where did they get you?"
"They didn't get me. I got myself. In the hand with glass." He held it up and held up the knife. "You're going to have to cut it off. I can't even get the knife open."
"You want me to cut off your hand?"
She sounded horrified. "No. The duct tape I put on it."
"Let me check the building again."
She picked up his rifle once more and scanned.
"Still no one. Okay, let me play medic here, though I don't know what I'm doing. Front of the hand or the back is hurt?"
"The heel of my hand, like the base of the thumb. Cut this mess off, then tape me up better."
"I don't have any first aid gear. Hang on."
She got out of her pack and upended it. She pawed through her gear and came up with a smashed flat roll of toilet paper and a bandana and a bottle of water. When he saw it, he craved it. "I'm thirsty."
"In a minute. I need to rinse your hand off first."
She flipped out knife blades until she found one she liked and began to saw through the tape. She unpeeled it from the back of his hand and then delicately eased it up from the palm. Blood poured out.
"Holy shit, Dev."
"I guess it's pretty deep." She dabbed at it with a bandana, but the blood kept coming.
"What do we do?"
"Pressure," he said. "Fold that cloth and hold it down on the cut. Then I'll hold it over my head." She folded the bandana and pressed it down on the wound. Dev yanked his hand back from the pain. It was totally involuntary.
"Maybe you should do it. It might be easier to suffer the pain if you have control of it."
He nodded and took over, holding both arms over his head and gripping his wound. She looked at him, worried.
"I think you'll need stitches."
"My mom can do that."
"But not right now."
"I'm not going to bleed to death, but my head might fall off. It's pounding."
"And all this blood is from this one cut? At least the rain is washing it off your face."
She used a finger and scrubbed above his eyebrow.
"Yeah, that's just old blood, not a cut. You look like you'd been dumpster diving outside a butcher shop when you came down those stairs. Glad your mom didn't see you like that."
"We should go help her."
"Dev,"
she said sternly.
"You're out of it for now. I want you to stay here. You hear me? He nodded, then winced at the sharp pain that brought. I'll go help. And here. She reached down and pulled her shirt off over her head. She was in a bra thing, a mysterious girl's undergarment he didn't know the name of. I'll wrap my shirt around your hand, too. Put it back on, he said. I don't want them to... I mean, if we don't win, we'll win. And if we didn't, and I live, they would probably try to rape me if I had 20 layers of clothes on. Put it back on, please. It won't help me. It might help you. It's camouflage. And let Mom know it's you coming. All right, all right. She tugged the shirt back down over her torso. I'm closing the door so there's no light, and leaving you your rifle. You stay still. If you start feeling cold, crawl in the truck and lock the doors. Dev watched her go, feeling such a wave of guilt that he almost was able to get up and follow her. But there was no reason to. He couldn't shoot right. Hell, with one hand holding the other, he couldn't even pick up his rifle. What a stupid thing to do, to cut his hand like that. He closed his eyes against the pain in his head, but it didn't help.
Chapter 13 Sierra pushed her worry about Dev to the back of her mind. He surely wouldn't bleed to death in the next half hour, and she wouldn't leave him alone for longer than that. In fact, if she had her way, the men in that building would all be dead by then. She ran to the back corner of the building and pressed herself against the wall, thinking about what she should do. If men had been in the driveway and there was a broken window, maybe she could also go in that way. A clap of thunder and a lightning flash came together. She left her night vision goggles dangling on her chest. The storm was right on top of them. Why wasn't it moving away from them? Monsoon storms usually moved quickly. But then she realized that probably only 10 minutes had passed since they left the jail. Battles took real time and twisted it around in the human mind, stretching it out, or making it slide by impossibly fast. She looked around the corner and saw no one. Stepping out, she scanned the wall. Most of the windows on the ground floor were thin slits that didn't look like they opened. There was part of a metal fire escape that ended over the only double-hung window. Was that a possible entry point? She saw no one at that window, and walked over to the fire escape, giving the friend whistle in case Kelly was within hearing range. The hairs on her neck rose in response to the thought of taking an accidental bullet from her own side. The end of the fire escape was pretty high, but she was tall. She bent her legs and leapt. Her fingertips touched metal, but she wasn't nearly close enough to grab on, and she hit the ground again. She stared up, her night vision goggles pushed up to her forehead, and waited for the next lightning strike to illuminate the scene. When it did, she saw the flat section that was made to descend from just below the second floor to the ground level. It couldn't be that hard to move, could it? They'd want a design that made it easy for panicked people fleeing a fire to push it down. She flipped the rifle's safety on, slung the strap over her head and one shoulder, and leapt again, aiming for the very end of the retracted section. This time her hands found the end, and immediately the section started to descend. Noisily, she let go, dropped to the ground, and it retracted. Because of the noise she had made by moving the fire escape, she hit the ground, curling right up against the building wall. She waited, but no one came out to investigate. Maybe they hadn't heard. Okay, good to know about the fire escape, but it didn't get her closer to the men in the meeting room. The window under the stairs was shut. No light shone through it. She slid the night vision goggles back over her eyes, pulled her rifle off her shoulder, and snapped the safety off, so she'd be ready to shoot if someone surprised her. Then she stood on tiptoes and put her face right up against the glass to look inside. Light spilled from the lit meeting room and under a closed door, but no one was in the hallway. The narrow hall ran behind that room but didn't seem to intersect the main central hallway that stretched from front door to back. She couldn't have accessed it from where she had been shooting at them before.
so they might not expect anyone to come from this direction. The window was closed. Locked? Probably. There wasn't anything like a handle outside, of course, but by reversing her rifle and reaching up, she could catch the lip of the window with the rifle butt. If it wasn't locked, it would move up under pressure. When a hand touched her shoulder, she almost screamed.
"Sorry," a man's voice whispered. "Kelly said it was you over here."
Jackson. Sierra's heart had leapt well above 100 beats per minute when the hand had touched her, and she found herself gasping for air.
"Sorry," Jackson said again. "What are you doing?"
"Seeing if I can get in this way. Come up behind them. Give me a boost, would you?"
"Be careful."
"Boost me up," she said. "Make a step." He leaned his rifle against the wall and made a step for her with his hands. She held her leg cocked up and felt it when he put pressure on her boot.
"Now," he said, and he lifted her up.
Sierra pushed at the window and was surprised when it slid up under her hands. She dropped one arm and put her hand down on the windowsill, pushing the window all the way up with her back. She wriggled through, having to fight her rifle, thinking she should have put on the safety again before she did this. She got herself balanced on the sill and shifted until she could get her hand on the rifle and pushed it in ahead of her. It hit with a crack that told her the floor wasn't carpeted. Then she shoved herself the last bit and dropped through, hands first, to the hall floor. She moved as silently as she could in getting back to her feet. The sound of rain pelting down outside seemed terribly loud to her from in here. A few rounds were fired from the meeting room. Now to her right as she leaned out the window and held her arms out for Jackson. What she felt instead of his hands was his rifle. She took it, leaned it against the wall by the window, and reached down for him. He gripped her forearms, and she did the same to him. Then she planted a foot on the wall under the window and heaved. The first moment was the hardest, but then his weight was moving, and she had him halfway through the window before she knew it.
"I'm good," he whispered.
She let go, found his rifle, and waited for him to get to his feet before returning it to him.
"New magazine," he whispered.
She waited while he changed his out. When she started to close the window, he said,
"Don't."
While he got ready to fire his weapon, she put the goggles on again and scanned the hallway. There was a door on her right, and she tiptoed up to it, put her hand on the knob, and twisted it open, glancing in fast and yanking her head back. A bathroom. No one in there. Did it lock? It would be another option for retreat if it locked, but she felt around and found no locking mechanism inside the door. So whatever they did next, if it didn't finish this, their retreat would have to be out the window. She went back to Jackson and leaned in close.
"Kick the door open and start shooting?"
she said.
"Not kick," he said, his breath tickling her ear. "Ease it open. You shoot left, then run. Outside."
"Okay," she said.
She could see the handle on the door to the meeting room. She felt it under her hand. Then she slipped her goggles back up. Opening the door would blind her otherwise. Not that she was going to do much careful aiming. As long as there were human figures to her left, she'd just empty this magazine at them and then take off running for the window. She took a knee, giving Jackson plenty of room to shoot over her head.
3, 2,
she whispered, as another single shot rang out from the meeting room. On one, she opened the door. It swung open, and Jackson grabbed it with his boot tip and swung it faster. When it was half open, she saw human forms and began firing, left to right, trying to hit them all, firing fast. Above her head, the sound of Jackson firing was deafening. She emptied her magazine, scrambled past him, and ran for the window, hoping he was on her heels. She heard him fire 4 more times, and then the door slammed. She tossed her rifle out of the window ahead of her, hoping it wouldn't be damaged in the fall, and launched herself through the opening after it. As she flew, she tried to drag her legs up to get them under her, but she only managed to land on her knees.
which hurt like a son of a bitch. She leaned and began to roll. A flash of lightning illuminated the scene. Her rifle was over there, 6 feet away, and Jackson's head was at the window, his rifle just now dropping from his outstretched arms. The last thing she saw before the light faded was him raising his hands to grip the open window and shifting his butt to the windowsill. Then the lightning faded, and the world went dark. She crawled to where her rifle was, her knees stinging. Then there was a light at the window, and the glass exploded outward. She moved fast, grabbing her rifle, getting somehow to her feet and running past the pain in her knees. Hard, back toward the truck where she'd left Dev. It was decent cover, and if Dev was in a bad way, she wanted to be able to defend him if they poured out here looking for her and Jackson. She heard Jackson running behind her, or she hoped it was him. Her neck crawled with the thought that it wasn't, and she put on a burst of speed, running so fast that when she reached the truck, she had misjudged the distance and slammed into the corner of it. She spun off, lost her balance, and sat in the middle of the parking lot. Without thinking, she raised her rifle and aimed at the footsteps, but when a soft flicker of lightning lit the parking lot, she saw it was indeed Jackson. Then she remembered she'd emptied the magazine, and it wouldn't have mattered had she shot. Still, she had to get control of her head. Too much damned adrenaline right now. "Are they after us?" Jackson said, swinging around behind the truck and squatting down. Sierra fought to control her racing mind as thunder echoed a second behind the lightning. Once the light had faded, she put her goggles on and looked at the building. No sign of humans.
"No."
"Get back here," Jackson said. Then, "What the hell?" Sierra rolled to her knees, which complained mightily, gave up on that thought, and scooted on her butt back to where Jackson was, pulling off her goggles because he had some sort of light on. He had a pen light and was looking down at Dev. "Is he dead?"
"I'm not dead,"
Dev mumbled.
"He's lost some blood, and I think he has a concussion or something,"
Sierra said.
"Keep that light on, would you? No, wait. Do you have any bandages? A bandana in your pack? Anything like that?"
"Yeah, here," Jackson said, and he stuck his light in his teeth and shrugged off his pack. He began pulling out items. Empty magazines, packaged MREs, an emergency blanket, a white plastic cylinder. She picked it up and read the printing on the side. Water filter. He'd come prepared. He said around the flashlight in his mouth, "Get the emergency blanket over him. Where's he hit?" Sierra said,
"Not shot. He cut his hand on glass."
"My head hurts," Dev said. "Can't give him aspirin," Jackson said, finding a first aid kit and opening up. "Not until I see how bad the bleeding is. You okay, buddy? Show me the cut." Sierra tore open the emergency blanket with her teeth and flipped it open, putting it over Dev's lower half and tucking it beneath him. She left Jackson to his first aid work and took the moment to change out her magazine. She was down to her last full one, but she had a box of ammo in her backpack. First, she looked back around the truck with the night vision goggles to make sure no one was coming. They were clear for now, so she took off her pack, found the box of ammo, and loaded up her empty magazines again, working under the dim reflected light of Jackson's penlight. Lightning again illuminated what he was doing for Devlin. Steady hands were wrapping gauze around Dev's hand. Sierra slid the final bullets into her magazines, mentally thanking Arch for drilling her on doing this fast. Thunder rumbled. The storm was moving away, though the rain was still coming down hard. The pen light flicked off. No problem for her, not with the goggles. With them on, she finished loading her magazines, put the magazines in her right pocket, closed up the nearly empty ammo box, and put it back into her pack.
"Okay, got it," Jackson said.
"Try and keep that above the level of your heart, Dev. Can you hold your rifle?"
"I think so," Dev said.
Sierra peeked around the corner of the truck and saw someone.
"Shh,"
she said. It was just one man, coming around the corner, a rifle in hand, looking.
She didn't know if it was one of theirs or the enemy, so she didn't fire at him. She just watched as he traversed the back wall of the building, sliding along. Was he thinking about coming to the truck or the car? He didn't seem to be. If he looked this way, she didn't see him do it. Still, if it was the enemy, he'd think of it sooner or later as a potential hiding spot. When he turned the corner to go up the far side of the building, she concluded it had likely been an invader, searching for them. Too late to shoot him now.
I think we should move. Can you, Dev?
I can walk, he said. There's a fence behind the lot, Jackson said.
I don't want to get too far from Kelly, Sierra said. If we can get around to her, or back to the jail, that'd be best.
In fact, now that she'd suggested it, she realized that getting Dev back to the relative safety of the jail was a good idea. Mr. Lambert could take care of him. How many did you get in there? Jackson said.
I was firing at three. I might have hit all three, but I didn't see any go down, she said.
I killed one, I'm sure of that, Jackson said. Otherwise, yeah, I didn't really stay to look at the results.
Even if we wounded five, killed one, that's good, she said.
I wonder where their spare ammo is, Jackson said. Not in that building, or they'd be firing a lot more rounds.
That's a good question, she said. Maybe we can hunt for it after we get Dev back to the jail.
That's what we're doing?
He's injured, and his head hurts, she said. I want him safe.
I'm okay, Dev said. He didn't sound okay. His voice was strained, as if the pain in his head was significant. Okay, Jackson said, ignoring Dev's protest. Wait for the next lightning strike for illumination. I'll check this direction. You look to the side of the parking lot over that way, and see what our options are. Sierra checked the back of the building one more time with the goggles on, then pushed them back up and waited for the world to light up again. There were only two rounds fired during the wait, both sounding as if they were from outside, from their group. She wondered if maybe she and Jackson had gotten most of the enemy in there. Get Dev safe first, and then deal with that. The lightning flashed, though much dimmer this time, a double flash, and she saw a row of tall trees, cedars maybe, and a low fence behind them. It looked like another parking area over there to her left. The fence was climbable for her and Jackson, though for Dev, one-handed, it might be a challenge. The fence behind the parking lot was tall, 8 feet, and it seemed to continue on to stretching behind the next lot as well.
It's okay this way, she said. Not ideal. How is it over there?
Concrete wall blocked some of the view.
Do you remember what this building over my way looked like?
It was a single story, and it seemed empty when I was watching the street.
Let's go this way. There's a short fence, but I'm sure Dev can manage it, right?
What? Dev said.
Fence. Can you climb?
Yeah. Where are we going?
Back to the jail to regroup, she said. Need help up?
I got him, Jackson said. You take point. I can't see much, so warn me of any obstacles.
Will do,
she said, and she slid the goggles back down over her eyes, made sure there were no humans moving anywhere, and trotted over the pavement toward the line of cedars. Slower, hissed Jackson. She slowed to a walk, scanning on all sides. She made the cedars and covered Jackson, who had his arm on Dev's back and looked ready to catch him if he fell. Dev staggered a step to the side, but then caught himself and marched forward again. They were almost to the cedars when another lightning strike blinded her. She had her eyes closed within a fraction of a second, but that didn't help the eye that had gotten the night vision blast of light. She pushed the goggles up. Not much to see with her good eye, not in this dark.
I need to wait a minute before I can see again, she said, as the men caught up to her.
Dev leaned against the fence.
Use my scope, he said, fumbling with his rifle strap.
I have it, Jackson said. Just hang on there. Sierra waited for Jackson to report. It looks clear this way. I'll go over the fence first. You give balance to Dev while he's coming over, okay, Sierra?
Will do, she said.
Dev grumbled about being helped, but he needed it. His bandaged hand was nearly useless, and when Sierra took that arm to help him balance, it was wet. Whether with rain or fresh blood, she didn't know.
"Let's go around the other side of the building," Jackson said.
"Okay, wait a sec," said Sierra, climbing over the fence after Dev.
She opened her bad eye again, but she still had the afterimages of the lightning blasting her vision. It'd take more time than this to recover.
"I'm good."
"Warn my mom so she doesn't shoot at us," Dev said.
"When we get up to the front of the building, I will,"
Sierra reassured him.
"Let's go," Jackson said. Halfway across the parking lot, another lightning flash illuminated the world. Unfortunately, it illuminated them as well. Sierra's skin crawled again as she imagined someone lining her up for a shot.
"Jog over to the side,"
she hissed at Jackson, and she grabbed Dev's arm and pushed at him, first one way, and then she dragged him back the other.
"Geez, Sierra," Dev said, fighting to stay upright.
"Sorry," she said, steadying him.
"Felt like we were naked targets out here. I wanted to avoid being shot."
"Building just ahead," Jackson said.
They made the back of the building and then followed the wall around to the far side. There were plants underfoot, bushes that tried to trip them, so they walked 6 feet out from the building, along a curb. Dev slid off it and fell to his knees.
"Crap,"
he said. Jackson flicked on his penlight, leaving it on a second, enough for Sierra to see Dev kneeling there, swaying a bit. As the light flicked off, Sierra helped Dev up.
"Only a little bit more," she said to him. "You can make it."
"I'm fine," he said, petulant.
"I know you are."
"Shh,"
Jackson said, as they neared the front corner of the building. Sierra made sure Dev had his balance and moved up to whisper in Jackson's ear.
"I need to signal Kelly."
"Go on then."
Sierra licked her lips and again whistled the signal for friend. An answering whistle came from a few dozen yards to their right.
"Go,"
she said to Jackson. She reached back for Dev, made sure he was moving, and walked alongside him across the street, feeling vulnerable. They made the jail entrance. Jackson knocked on the door. 3, then 2. Light spilled out onto them as the door opened. Sierra pushed Dev ahead and followed him in. Jackson entered last. The lamp lit the first room. The peacock guy was standing there, looking shocked.
"My God, what happened?" he said.
In the lamplight, Sierra could see them for the first time. She and Dev both had blood on them, and the rain had spread it. They looked like they'd been rolling around on the floor of a slaughterhouse.
"It's Dev, and it's only one cut," she said.
"Must have bled bad," the man said.
The name came back to her. Lambert.
"You got this, Sierra?" Jackson said. "I want to get back out there."
"I'll come with you," she said. "Mr. Lambert, please take care of Dev. Get his hand wrapped better if it needs it, okay?"
"Okay. Here, Dev, come and have a seat."
He led him back into the next room, and Sierra felt a wave of relief for knowing he'd be cared for. Jackson said to her,
"You okay on ammo?"
"Just filled 3 magazines. I have another 20 or so rounds in a box. I'm okay."
"Good. Let's get back out there to Kelly."
"How many down of the enemy do you figure?"
"No way to know."
"They sure weren't shooting much by the time we came over here."
"Let's hope they're not saving it all up."
"Ready?"
She adjusted her backpack and her rifle.
"We're leaving," he said, loudly enough for Lambert and Dev to hear.
Then he jerked his head at the door. Sierra went first, checked the street, saw it was clear, and again noted the lights were out in the building across the way. She turned her head to say,
"They put the lights out."
"Should have done it sooner," Jackson said.
She slipped her goggles back down over her eyes. Her eye had recovered from the shock of the lightning. She saw the forms of several people outside. Her people. Kelly and the men from the jail. They were hiding behind whatever cover they could find. One form was cooler than the rest.
"I think we have a man down."
"Yeah," Jackson said. "One of the baton guys got hit."
"Dead?"
"Yep.
Damn. We need to check in with Kelly.
Go on. She ran across the street saying,
It's me.
No sense in whistling. Most of these guys wouldn't know the whistled signals. A female voice should reassure them.
Who is it?
One of the men said, his voice strained and nervous.
Sierra and Jackson. Where's Kelly?
She was scanning the group, but saw no one short enough to be Dev's mom. She went around back to make sure they don't sneak out that way. A different man said. Not 15 minutes ago. How many are left? Jackson said.
Not many, and they haven't fired in 4 or 5 minutes,
said the first guy. He had a rifle in his hands, its barrel still glowing with heat. Sierra realized she didn't know any of their names. Hadn't asked.
I think we should rush the building,
a third man said.
What did Kelly tell you?
Sierra asked.
To wait for her signal, the second man said.
Then we should wait for her signal. I'm seeing nothing inside.
How can you with the lights off? Jackson said. She has night vision equipment.
Wait here, she said. Take orders from Jackson while I'm gone.
Jackson said. Where are you going? He laid his hand on her arm for a second.
To back up Kelly. She said she'd shoot anybody coming from any direction, said one of the Paysanites. I'll be fine, Sierra said. We have our own signals.
Be careful, Jackson said.
You guys too. If nothing happens in 10 minutes, I'd retreat to the jail if we aren't back, for safety's sake. If any of those men in there made it out and went for reinforcements.
She left the thought to finish itself in their imaginations.
Jackson's in charge until Kelly returns.
Then she jogged back up the side of the building, looking for heat signatures, and whistling for Kelly's ears. Of course anyone would hear her whistling, and here in the city at night, they'd be less likely to confuse it for a bird call. But only Kelly and Jackson knew the meaning of the sound. She made it down the driveway without seeing anyone. At the corner of the building, she saw a figure climbing the back fence, and another sprawled on the pavement partway there. She raised the rifle and aimed, but she couldn't tell if the climber was Kelly or not. She whistled, but a burst of wind stole the sound. Sierra ran for the truck again, making sure she was hidden from the back windows of the building, and as the person dropped over the fence, she yelled,
Kelly!
As loudly as she could.
Sierra?
A voice said, from so close that it made Sierra jump in surprise. Kelly was behind the car.
There's a man on the fence, she said. Can you get him?
Kelly said. In answer, Sierra lifted her rifle, aimed at the fleeing man, and fired. The glow disappeared.
Get him? I don't think so. Want me to pursue? No, I want you to... Gosh darn it. Oh, there it is. What? My rifle. I think I have it fixed now. Where are you exactly? Behind the front of this car. You okay? Yeah. Where's Dev? He's back at the jail.
Kelly came into view and squat-walked over to Sierra.
What's wrong with him?
Sierra had no idea how she'd known. Mom radar.
Cut himself, and he says his head hurts. I knew I should have kept him at home. Not sure you could have stopped him from coming. Is he going to be okay? I think you'll need to stitch his hand, but he's okay for now. Mr. Lambert is there to tend to him. How long since the cut? I don't know. It's hard to tell time. 20 minutes? Can't wait too long before I stitch. Is it still bleeding? Was a minute or two ago. Unless you put pressure on it, it bleeds. Aspirin. I bet you he was sneaking more aspirin than I knew about, so he's not clotting normally. What's up with the invaders?
Sierra asked.
I got one as 4 of them ran. Then my rifle jammed. Is it okay now? It was an FTE. Probably a bad round, though I'd hate to think it of my husband. You should fire it a few times. Make sure. Hate to waste the rounds, but you're right. Firing a round in 3, she said.
Sierra covered her ears with her hands as Kelly counted down. She fired 2 quick rounds at the rear fence.
Seems to be working now. Good thing. Didn't bring a spare weapon except a Bowie knife.
Sierra hadn't known she carried a knife, but it didn't surprise her. The Quinns were well supplied with weapons and knew how to use them all.
What now?
I think we should clear the building. If there are runners, I'll bet that the ones inside are dead.
Okay, I'm ready if you are. I know of an open window in back.
Let's go, Kelly said, grunting softly as she got to her feet.
You hurt?
Sierra said.
Getting old is all, Kelly said. Lead the way.
Sierra returned to the window she and Dev had entered before and boosted Kelly through it. The two of them headed straight for the room where the enemy had been meeting, staying to cover the best they could. But eventually, one of them had to risk looking through the broken glass doors. Sierra wanted to do it, but Kelly overruled her. Sierra stayed tense, ready to run and shoot, to defend Kelly. But after Kelly had crawled to a good vantage point and watched for 30 seconds, she stood yelling,
"None of you move! Hands up!"
Sierra ran to her side, looking in the room through the goggles. Several dead or wounded men were there, one with his hands over his head. One was rolling on the ground, whimpering.
"Get out here if you can walk," Kelly said.
"Out in the hall. Now."
"I can't walk," said the one with his hands up. "My leg."
One man walked toward them. Sierra said,
"Are you armed?"
She couldn't see any weapon on him. A discharged weapon should still be glowing with heat. In fact, she could see several shapes of guns on the floor, and one on a big table in the center of the room.
"No,"
he said.
"Why didn't you run like the others?"
Kelly said.
"I was tending to the injured,"
he said. Sierra was surprised at that. She'd seen them as so demonic that one would stay behind to help the others seemed out of character. Kelly said,
"Get over here. Hands on the front door. Spread 'em. Sierra, check him for weapons."
Sierra didn't know how to do that, but she'd seen it in movies. Feel for metallic lumps, she supposed. She didn't want to touch him, but she patted him on the chest, back, and sides.
"Check his ankles."
Sierra remembered that Arch carried a pistol there. She patted around his ankles and calves, but there was nothing.
"I think he's unarmed," she said. "Keep your eye on the other men in that room. I'll double-check this one."
One of them said,
"I need help. I'm bleeding."
Kelly yelled back,
"Tough it out."
To the man, she said,
"Sit down there and answer some questions."
"I can't," he said, then said in a whisper,
"Not here."
He turned his head toward the others in the meeting room.
"Sierra, you okay watching all those guys? I'm going to march him over to the jail and stop and check Dev."
"Yeah." It seemed all but two in here were dead. Kelly left, calling out to their men outside before she left the front door.
"You could help me,"
yelled the one who had said he was bleeding.
"I could,"
Sierra said sweetly. She stayed right where she was. These were the kind of men who had assaulted Emily, who had sent 20 of their kind up to her neighborhood to kill them, using children as shields. They could all bleed out their useless lives onto the floor as far as she cared. She'd be happy to be on the firing squad, if execution was their fate. Giving them first aid would be a waste of time, unless she could get one of them to talk. Might be useful to keep one alive to get information from him, but they already had two alive over in the jail. She stepped over the broken glass and into the room, weaving among the bodies, kicking at them to see if anyone was playing possum. She moved to the open front windows, not right up in case someone out there saw movement and shot at her, but close enough they might hear her.
"It's Sierra," she yelled. "We're clear in here. You can come in."
She went back to her search of bodies. When she was done, she wove back through, picking up weapons, piling them on the central table.
"Sierra?"
Jackson's voice, from the front hall.
"In here. We have two still alive but injured,"
the invader said.
"Those guns are empty. Can you help me now? My leg is bad, man."
"Where's your spare ammo stored?"
Sierra asked. A light came on, and the world flashed white, blinding her.
Jesus!
She yelled, yanking the goggles off.
Warn a person!
Through her undamaged eyelid, she saw the light go back off.
Sorry, said someone. I found a lantern.
Now Sierra had lost where the whining enemy was.
Shit! Turn that back on if you want, but keep it dim and stay low in case someone bad comes up from outside and sees us in here.
She turned around until she saw, for the first time, the men in the room. Saw their faces. Saw the blood. Carnage. The word came to her from a lesson in junior English class on word origins. The word came from an old word for flesh, as did char and carnelian, a stone the color of bloody meat. Bullet wounds opened up the body, ripped away the skin that usually hid the truth, that we were all made of meat. Plenty of raw meat on display in this room.
We lost one?
Sierra asked, bending down to pick up another rifle. She just stopped herself in time from saying,
Only lost one?
Yeah, Noah Reed. He was an insurance adjuster. Married. No kids.
Sierra couldn't stop the thought that it was a better person to have die than some. His wife probably wouldn't think so. Then she realized she wasn't any better than Noah, whose last name she'd already forgotten. She had no job skills that made her valuable in the post-oil world, just raising hens and shooting people.
What now?
Another man asked her.
Wait for Kelly. She's leading us.
Can we go home? We're done here.
No, she said. You agreed to that. You only put yourself at risk anyway. But you need to wait until Kelly gives you the okay. And there may be more for us to do.
She wondered what Kelly would decide to do next. Hunt down the roving patrols with just her and Kelly? Or go back as a team, all 10 of them armed? And clear the southernmost tip of the town? It wouldn't be smart to take the men up toward the other armed group, their friends coming in from the north. But she'd better give them something to do, or she'd have a hard time holding them here.
I tell you what you can do, she said. Three of you get up to the top of the building, open the windows, and listen hard. See if you can hear any gunfire away to the north. Northeast, northwest, whichever. If you do, estimate how far away it is.
Which three? Jackson asked.
You and, I guess, anyone who hunts. Wouldn't you be better at guessing the distance of gunfire if you had that experience?
After a brief debate, three of them went up. Jackson said, We'll clear the building too while we're up there. Sierra nodded her thanks. Maybe he understood she was trying to keep the men engaged in a task. To a pair without weapons, she said,
Okay, you can all shoot, right? We have rifles here, but I assume they were out of ammunition by the end. I need two of you to check all their firearms and see if any are loaded. If you find a loaded one, keep it.
That left three men without something to do. She asked for their names and tried to commit them to memory.
Sorry if I forget your names later on.
Don't sweat it, one of them said.
Will, was it?
So what do we do?
She was inclined to shoot the injured men and get rid of that problem, but that'd have to be someone else's decision, not hers alone.
Two of you, give these two guys first aid, and then tie them up real well. See if you can convince them to tell us where their armory or spare ammo is. You, Roy, is it? Find a closet we can put them in that locks, or that has a door that opens out so you can move furniture in front of it to block them in. Maybe you can find keys in a desk drawer. I need to use the restroom. Be right back.
One of the guys checking guns said, I wouldn't mind a functioning one myself.
There's a small one right here off this back hallway. When I'm done, the rest of you can use it.
Sierra used the toilet, got a trickle of water from the faucet, and washed her hands and forearms, which were splattered with Dev's dry blood, or someone else's. There were no paper towels, though there was liquid soap in a bottle. So she had to scrub at the dried blood with her fingernails. After a few minutes, she was cleaner. But when she returned to the lit room, she saw it would take a scrub brush to get all the blood off. It was ground in around her nails and cuticles.
How are the injured ones?
She asked.
She noticed for the first time how much better fed the dead men looked than the prisoners, whose clothes hung loose.
I don't think that one will make it.